You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back. I'm Scott Buttram. I'm not Phil Williams. I'm filling again for him today. Phil is taking a little break with his wife, and we hope they're enjoying themselves. We are coming to you from News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Joining us now is one of my favorite folks. I'm actually a guest on his show pretty regular, Jeff Poor of the Jeff Poor Show. Jeff also works with 1819 News, a new statewide media group that you've heard a great deal about here through this station. Jeff just left Yellowhammer to join 1819. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me on.
Listen, I appreciate you taking the time. I thought about giving you a list of things we were going to talk about, but we try that when I come on your show and it never works. We just end up talking about whatever we want to. But specifically, one thing I do want to ask you about is your view of this current legislative session. We're about 75% through now. What are you seeing? What are the highlights for you?
The first thing that comes to mind is the whole, the two big things. They got constitutional carry done, and they really built up. The prelude to the session was all about the critical race theory ban. I think if they don't get that done, there's going to be a lot of disappointment. Those are two pretty easy things. They seem like layups, right? That the legislature, not expect too much out of them in a fourth year of a quadrennium. It is really just get the budgets passed, and then you go back to campaigning. But get some red meat out there. And I was talking to this with the guys yesterday on this program. Maybe what the biggest accomplishment of this last quadrennium, if you're running for re-election, Scott, as a member of the legislature, what is the one thing that you can really highlight in your campaign stump speech that you did, that the legislature did in this quadrennium? And there's just not a whole lot there. So I kind of wonder what's left of this session. If people aren't thinking that way, and maybe there's going to be a little added emphasis, a little motivation to get at least one more box checked. And I think that's the what they call it, the divisive concepts bill done.
I'm a big school choice guy, so this has been an extremely disappointing session to me. Though if I'm realistic, I never expected Del Marsh's Parents' Choice bill, but before it hit the ground, I think I got a heads up maybe a couple of weeks before, and I wasn't even sure it was going to come together and be presented. That got tabled. Well, they didn't table it. They sent it to committee to die. In your opinion, and my feeling is that works against the Republican legislature. In your opinion, am I making too big a deal of that? Is it as popular as I want to believe it is?
I honestly don't think it is, at least not in Republican precincts. Now, in maybe in the state as a whole, it's popular. Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. I mean, generally in the rural Republican areas, I think a lot of people are satisfied with their local school system, their public school system. Their mamas went to it, mamas and daddies, their grandparents, that they like the system they have, or they like the situation they have. And they would probably tell you if they had their way, there would be school choice, but it's probably not at the top of the list. Where you really need school choice are the Democrat precincts, and there's no appetite among Democrats for any kind of school choice. They are just they are too tied, too wedded to the AEA and what the AEA wants. But look at your school choice, pro school choice members of the legislature, Scott. Look at Del Marsh, Anniston, mm-hmm. Kerry Collins up in Decatur, the Charlotte Meadows down in Montgomery. Think about those members, quasi-urban, the schools aren't quite where they need to be. School choice will make sense in those scenarios. But I think you've got to get more buy-in. You've got to figure out a way to sell it to the more rural, Farmers Federation-type Republicans to show them that this is a good way to go. until you, when you do that, then maybe this has a chance at the legislature.
You know, I think you really nailed it there, and I'm in that boat. It, for me, it is about what it could do for the state as a whole. I'm tired of being 50th. I want to see some kids in struggling areas have other opportunities. I've got a freshman in high school. My daughter's a freshman in high school. If it passed, it wouldn't affect us. She's not leaving. She's at a great high school, and she'll graduate there. So it's not something that would benefit us personally. But growing up in Tuscaloosa, next to the Black Belt, and seeing such a beautiful part of Alabama just dying on the vine because the schools are so terrible there. But you're right. That is a heavily controlled Democrat area. They are married to the AEA, and they're, so they're voting against their own self-interest. I think that probably sums up the problem we've got with getting it passed. Let's talk about the constitutional carry bill that passed. Jeff, I spoke about it earlier. We do have Andrew Sorrell coming on a little later today. I supported it. I was for it. But I'm failing to see the big benefit. I'm paying $7.50 a year for my concealed carry permit. I've got to keep buying that because I spend a lot of time in northeast, extreme northeast Alabama, crossing state lines back and forth into Georgia and Tennessee. And, you know, we're so close to the state lines, we're just in and out all the time. So I've still got to have it for the reciprocal privilege. What am I missing here? What is the really big deal about this?
I think it's an argument of principle. And there's this fear that today it's a gun permit. Once tomorrow is a gun registry, that you just have this sort of, I don't know if it's paranoia, but it's trending in that direction about any regulation, any requirement dealing with your Second Amendment rights. So the deal with that is there are people that, I mean, these are the most fired up, dedicated to the cause, these Bama Carry folks. They really, really, really don't like the idea, the notion that if we believe the Second Amendment is a right and you interpret it as a right, just as we have freedom of religion and freedom of speech and freedom of the press, freedom to bear arms, and why is it, whose right is it? Why is it the government's right to require you to have a permit? I don't think it's necessarily about the monetary aspect or any of it. It's just a matter of principle and a matter of just wanting the fear of where the government might take it, you know, that it's a slippery slope. And that's the way they interpret the Constitution. Even though the Supreme Court says something completely different, that's the conservative interpretation of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, I think I get that. And I understand that. I know when I bought my AR, I had to fill out paperwork there at the gun shop, at the gun store. And I remember thinking, I really don't want to fill this out. I really don't want the government to know that I'm buying this gun or that I have this gun, because I don't think it's their business. And I think I've got every right to own it. But, you know, that's another thing. We're still going to have to do that. But I think I get the point. You know, if first the concealed carry permit, what's next? Also, I did think of this. The sheriff's department does have the ability to refuse to give you a concealed carry permit. And they're not under a lot of restrictions for the reasons. There are some specific reasons they would deny it, but they've got a lot of flexibility there.
Yeah, and do we want to be beholden to the county sheriffs when it comes to constitutional issues? I get that as well. I get the sheriff's side of this, too. I mean, there is a public safety aspect, and if their mission, their core mission is protecting the public, this will interfere with it. There's no question about it, but there's also the monetary aspect to it. There's all these different moving parts and pieces, but we gotta just kind of look at it from a Second Amendment purist standpoint, I suppose, and what should the state of Alabama stand for? And how should we be governed? And I think a lot of people want to err on that side of the permitless carry.
Well, I live in Jefferson County, which I'm hoping gets me a free ticket to heaven. We have our first Democrat sheriff there since I've lived there, Sheriff Petway. I don't have a lot of confidence in him or his department, his officers that I know. I've got a lot of confidence in those guys. They're good guys. But the administration of that department and his leadership of that department has been a concern since he took office. So I guess things are different in different counties, and I kind of understand it. I'm just not seeing a huge financial savings there. But I think you made the point. It's about more than the money, the $750 I spend. It's more about just the policy itself.
Yeah, where it may head, right? That the government today, it's a gun permit. It's maybe it's a registry, or maybe it's something else later on down the road that you know we can stay at the status quo, or we could try to go back in the other direction. And I think that's where the push is, to take away more of the local entanglements to the Second Amendment.
Jeff, let's talk politics a little bit. You keep up with this. You really are in touch behind the scenes. You're well connected, and you've got a lot of sources and get a lot of information. Let's start with the U.S. Senate race. We just had Katie Britt on. What are you seeing from the inside on that?
Here's what I think. Let's look at 2020 in that Senate race. I think north of the Tennessee River, Mo Brooks has got Michael Durant on as a problem. It's going to take away some of his vote. I think Katie Britt's going to do well in my neck of the woods down in Mobile. I think she's going to do well in the Wiregrass. I think that really what's up for grabs, where these elections are always decided, is in your market in Birmingham, in that Birmingham DMA. And if I had to guess, I think Mo Brooks wins that right now. I just people think of Birmingham, outside of Birmingham, as Mount Brook and Vestavia and Hoover.
Right.
But it's not that. It's Gadsden, Tuscaloosa, Leeds, Trussville. It's all these other places. And I just think that lines up more with a Congressman Brooks right now.
We've got a lot of rural suburban areas that are really kind of have a rural feel. I think you're right about that. Hey, Jeff, we've got a break coming up. Can I get you to stay with us for a few minutes on the other side?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much. This is Scott Buttram sitting in for Phil Williams at Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Back. This is Scott Buttram sitting in for Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, here at News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, and WVNN. On the line with us is Jeff Poor of the Jeff Poor Show. Jeff is a good friend and very, very in touch with Alabama politics in general, and knows just about everything going on in the state. He's pretty well connected there. So, Jeff, we just talked about the Senate race. I've got one more question about the Senate race that I want to pose to you, and then I'd like to talk about the governor's race a little bit. We had a caller while Katie Britt was on with us for an earlier interview. We had a caller, didn't come on the air, but wanted us to ask Katie Britt what differentiated her from Mo Brooks. I'm going to ask you that question. What is the difference in a Katie Britt and a Mo Brooks?
I think the biggest thing will be what is your goal in a U.S. Senator? Mo Brooks is going to be more the ilk of the Rand Pauls and the Ted Cruz, and going to be willing to use his authority, his ability as a United States Senator to slow down things. I don't think he's going to be as constituent services oriented, perhaps. But I think there's people that really yearn for that. They want somebody to kind of slow down the behemoth of the federal government, and there's an anti-federal government attitude. That's your guy, if that's where you are. However, if you think that the system is what it is, and you want somebody to work within the system, it's not necessarily that it's a swamp in their mind, but whatever you think of the system is what it is. Katie Britt's going to be that person. She may not be Richard Shelby right away, but she is going to probably be somebody that is going to be more willing to be receptive to some of the interest of Alpha or the business community or whatever it may be, whereas Mo, not so much.
I feel really good about the candidates, the Republican candidates for that seat. I'm not looking at Mike Durant that seriously. He's made a move, but he's dumped a bunch of money, and it didn't get him where he really needed to get. He's still a player in it. I'm not saying he's not. He is very much still a player in this game. But I'm looking at it more of a Brooks-Britt matchup going down the stretch. You and I both know everything in the United States Senate is dictated by seniority. The minute Richard Shelby retires and steps out of that office, Alabama is going to be in the weakest position in the United States that they have been in my lifetime. I'm 61 years old. We will never have had a pair of senators with this little seniority. It'll be a combined 2 years when whoever steps in. One of the things I've been thinking about at 61, with my first grandchild on the way, by the way, you know, and I've got a 15-year-old daughter at home, so you start looking more toward our kids' future, my grandchild's future, my future grandchild's future, and wondering, I feel like the vote, whether it's coming from Brooks or Britt, will be reliably conservative on virtually every issue. But I'm wondering if it's time to look at the fact that we're going to have to build back seniority. Is that a bad way to look at things? Is it unrealistic, or is that something I should just throw out the window?
I mean, it's also the future of the country. What kind of country do you want your grandchildren, your children to live right in? I think this has a little bit to do with that. And I've always kind of been as uneasy, I guess is the word I would use, with this idea that we need a Richard Shelby, that we need the Tom Bevels, that we need the breadwinners in that spot in Washington, D.C., because Alabamians are relying upon the federal government. Look, Richard Shelby's done a lot of good stuff. The city of Birmingham transitioning from an industrial steel city to healthcare sector, you could thank Richard Shelby for that. This listening audience, obviously Huntsville would not be what it is today with Redstone Arsenal, with the defense contractors, with NASA, if not for Richard Shelby. He gets credit for that. But when we talk about these things, you know, this is to assume this. Without Richard Shelby, would Huntsville be a ghost town? Would Birmingham be a hollowed-out right. Rust Belt city? I don't think so.
Right.
I think we have a lot to offer in Alabama, and we don't necessarily need the federal government to be successful. So I'm, like, real uneasy about this idea that the success of this state, it hinges on congressional representation and anything the federal government does as a conservative, because that's what we are taught, that's what we are our understanding of government and the role of government in our lives to be, is we're not as reliant upon it that we can be self-sufficient. So I just, this whole thing with Richard Shelby, it's fine. I can acknowledge some of the good stuff he did, but I do feel uneasy that we are reliant upon the federal government for our success.
Jeff, we got about a minute left with this segment, maybe even less than that. So I want to ask you real quickly, Kay Ivey still showing a commanding lead. The polls are showing a little bit of play. We're down to 1 minute. Can you give us a very quick 30, 40-second synopsis? Where do you see the governor's race right now?
She's sitting right at 50%. She's trending in the wrong direction to avoid a runoff. I think it probably goes to runoff between her and Tim James. But, you know, that could change. He's right on the fence.
Wow. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We will be right back after this break here at Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, filling in for Phil Williams.